Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
In a news landscape gone mad, the people cried out for a hero. Forged in the heat of satire, this is The Gargle, a refreshing earful of news that's gone through the fires of the modern-day news cycle and emerged naked of politics, clad only in jokes. We're the glossy magazine to The Bugle's audio newspaper for visual world. Welcome to The Gargle. Your guests today are the man who consistently insists he's not related to the one in the pear tree, Benjamin Partridge. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
And the other man who also has the last name that's a type of animal. What are they hiding with these Kaiser Soze names? Richard Herring.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm very well.
Good.
We're going to go through the magazine together, but before we open the magazine, let's have a look at the front cover. The cover model is Elon Musk's pong-playing monkey posing in a stylish summer suit while glamorously spilling a bottle of water and laughing into the camera. The quote is, "Summer style tips, I'm still incapable of consent." Other headers on the front page include pre-post-pandemic workout trends, tone up as you bone up on what the World Health Organization considered safe these days. Subheadline, watch the squashed sausage of scientific consensus get made while losing faith in your judgment. And actors, do we need them anymore? Tom Cruise says yes, but he would. Inside the magazine, top yacht holidays for gun nuts when you can't escape the consequences of your actions on land. The satirical cartoon this week is a picture of a vaccine with a condom on it looking saucy, saying stay safe. And the less controversial satirical cartoon is a priest, a rabbi, and a feminist walking into a bar, and the priest's speech bubble says, "I'm not sure that focusing on identitarian differences at the cost of social unity is a good strategy for the long-term health of society." And the rabbi says, "But it's important to accept and acknowledge social imbalances and the ways in which they disproportionately impact vulnerable groups, so we need to strike a balance between giving valence to our underlying capacity to understand one another while honouring our differences in a way that cultivates strength and community rather than weaponized victimhood." And the feminist is saying, "Why did you assume I was a woman?" Now it's time for our first segment, our at-home section. This is a house raffle. Benjamin Partridge, have you been following this story?
I have. So this is a couple who, instead of selling their home in the conventional way, have decided to go down the route of the only gambling you can do at church, a raffle. Love a raffle. It's the only raffle prize that comes with a binding and ongoing council tax bill. The couple... I've lived there for 13 years. They've got two children, Morgan, 15, and Tyler, 13, who will be won as part of a tombola they'll be setting up outside the property. What I liked about the news coverage of this, it was quite hysterical. What it didn't cover was what the third, fourth, second, and fifth prizes are. I did a bit of research. Second place is a working post office. Third is a selection of chutneys. Fourth is a lovely meat hamper from a local butcher. And fifth is a fully operational Chinese aircraft carrier. So it's all to play for. It's only £10. The house is worth £190,000. And they stand to make £400,000. So everyone's a winner.
Yes, they're only selling the house if they get 40,000 tickets sold.
Wow.
And then the winner gets the house. Otherwise, the winner gets 75% of the proceeds of the raffle. So everyone's a winner, except for everyone who paid £10 and got f***ing nothing but the satisfaction that they kickstarted someone else's new home. But that's how raffles work, right? Also how taxes work, except in the tax raffle, the winner is never schools and hospitals, which is weird. Bad luck again, schools and hospitals. Is this political? We're not meant to do politics on this show, but I guess it depends on whether you think schools and hospitals are political. And I'd argue that politicising resources for children and sick people would be a f***ing insane position to take. So it can't be politics. Richard, have you been following this story?
I did see this. It's happened a few times. I've noticed this a few times. People have done this for varying properties and varying prices. £10 is a pretty sweet deal. I mean, you know, you're not necessarily... It's terrible that the only way onto the property ladder for most normal people is to risk £10 in the hope that you win a house in, is it in Bolton? It's not
the most attractive.
It's not. I mean, no offence to the people of Bolton, but you know, it's weird to have to win a house in a specific place unless you live there. Obviously, you could sell it. I would suggest they're probably having difficulty selling it. I had difficulty selling my house in London, and this did cross my mind, the idea of doing some kind of raffle. But I think that there's a lot of legal stuff you have to go through, and there's a lot of problems with it. And I know some people who've done it have ended up falling into trouble because, you know, obviously it's sort of gambling.
Richard, I don't want to interrupt you or correct you, but it is Stoke, so that changes the whole
Stoke
picture.
It's even worse. I would like to apologise to people of Bolton for thinking they were as bad as Stoke-on-Trent, which is literally one of the worst places in the world. I say that as a tourist. It's not as bad as Middlesbrough, where my family are from, though. So I think I'm allowed to take the piss out of terrible British towns.
I mean, comedically speaking, what you're doing there is situating yourself at the bottom of the heap, so everywhere else is punching up, right?
I'm punching up from my lovely Hertfordshire home that I actually live in. Yeah, I mean, obviously everyone can't do it. It works if a few people do it, and a few charities do this as well. I've seen charity things online, but also some, you know, I don't see a problem with them making money out of it. I mean, that's the nice thing about it. You could, if it goes well, you know, you, and especially with a property that's that cheap, that's the nice thing about the north of England compared to the south, is that properties are pretty cheap. It's not a terrible house. £190,000.
It's got a built-in fish tank.
That's not so bad, is it?
You know.
I did see Jimmy Carr's house in a Hello magazine thing as I was looking for my own topical show. I don't usually read Hello magazine, and his house is worth £8.5 million and has and it's in a nice is it up by the what's that nice part of London called? It's up by London Zoo, that sort of Regent's Park area. It's very nice. But I don't think he'll have to raffle to sell it. I think he'll manage to sell it if he needs to.
Well, I feel like as meta commentary on the housing market, a raffle to buy a house is quite a good way to do it, because it draws attention to the incredible amount of luck that plays into most people's entry into the property ladder.
Yeah, but you know, I think for 10 quid it's sort of that's fine. If you can get, it's whether you can get 40, is it 40,000 people need to do it to make that work, is that, yeah, because you're saying they want to make £400,000, so that's quite a lot of people. I would have said, hey, maybe go for a bit more money and a bit fewer tickets, but for the chance to do it. But good luck. I'd say good luck to them, but if everyone starts doing it, then everyone's just paying for houses and not getting a house.
In other at-home news, soapy porn news. This is my favourite kind of story. It's in the Metro, which means you know it's impeccable journalism covering a story so subtle and nuanced it doesn't exist. This is the story of a man who isn't an actor on a soap I don't watch and who isn't going to do pornography. Ex-Emmerdale actor Mike Parr has joked that he's thinking about accepting an invitation to do pornography, but he probably won't do it. Benjamin Partridge, have you got skin in the game on this?
Well, I'm not a porn actor. But I have been...
Not yet,
exactly. I think this is a...
Dare to dream.
This is a pandemic story, really, because this story tells us why Britain needs pantomimes. Pantomimes didn't happen this year. And that's usually the kind of safe, you know, ramp off the soap. You know, the former soap actor goes into the pantomime world and manages to get by. Once those pantomimes are shut... you know, it's all bets are off. I'm sure if we scratch the surface, looked at what other soap actors or former soap actors have been doing this year, we'd be finding, you know, porn, professional wrestling, illegal boxing, snuff movies. You know, it's all without that safety net of pantomimes. The lot of the former soap actor is a grim world.
Well, I watch mainstream pornography like I watch Panto. He's behind you. Sorry. I think mainstream pornography is only very good for people who are very aroused by very bad acting. She doesn't look like she's enjoying herself at all, but she says she is.
It's said in the coverage that his character left Coronation Street after what is described as an acid attack and a traumatic hostage storyline. And I just hope that the porn film doesn't pick up where that storyline left off.
I kind of hope it does. But, you know, that's what the beautiful thing about pornography. There's something for everyone out there. However weird you thought you were, the internet will prove. Out of all the jobs you could choose to do during a pandemic, I think porn actor is probably the wrong direction to move into, isn't it? I'll go from being an actor to one who's completely intimate and exchanging fluids and generally not. It's terrible. They generally don't wear condoms. And I find that
reprehensible. Is that right, Richard?
It puts me off. I just think, well, how that lady could get pregnant and think of the diseases. I can't enjoy this. I'm too worried about their future lives. So, yeah, that's it. I mean, but I think, like, lockdown has led... I mean, I've had so many emails from those companies that do... it's sort of like pornography, where they ask, you know, faded celebrities to do birthday messages for people and they pay 50 quid. And it's sort of... And you have to think, am I that desperate for money that I will spend my day doing little video messages for people? And so far, I've said no, but I have been asked a lot. So I understand the temptations to move into slightly degrading.
What would make you feel dirtier? A full pornographic sex film or saying happy birthday to someone's mum?
Well, see, I'm happy to say happy birthday. I shouldn't say this because I always, if someone emails me and says, will you do a video to say happy birthday to someone? I go, yeah, of course I will. But and I usually ask for a little charity donation. But yeah, to do it, it just sort of feel, it just, I mean, you know, maybe it'll happen. I'm not going to discount it. I think... I mean, being in the porn industry would be interesting. I don't think I would be, you know, as you don't have to be attractive as a man. That's the good thing. But what you have to be is capable at any moment and ready to go. And I'm 53 years old and I need a little bit of written warning from my wife sends me a note a couple of days beforehand, and I'm spending a couple of days just working things up to the boil and then I'm ready. So I think I'm not sure porn is the best avenue for me. But, you know, occasionally they have old blokes on there, don't they? So I'll give it a... I'm open to offers, both for the birthday thing and you know, spunking on people for money.
What if someone wanted you to crack a boner for their birthday?
Well, but that's what... Isn't that basically what the OnlyFans thing? Is that what it is? I do a ventriloquist dummy act now. And as a joke, I've got a female 129-year-old ventriloquist dummy. And as a joke, I tried to set up an OnlyFans account for her. And that I was going to let her show her ankle to people and stuff. And they wouldn't accept me. They wouldn't allow it. I don't know whether it's because the picture of the doll didn't match my driving license. But so I feel that was quite a judgment. So I think you can do that on OnlyFans if you wish. Again, I think the number of offers I would, you know, it's the Groucho Marx thing, isn't it? Who would want to be a member of the club that would want to see Richard Herring and his
member
and his slightly depleted genitalia? Who would want to see that?
Your ad section now, because you can't be what you can't buy. Don't believe in violence, but desperately need to crack a creep in the nuts? Introducing the Groin Knee 5000. Basically a Roomba with a jack in the boxing glove on top, the Groin Knee 5000 uses decommissioned Russian military hardware to identify threatening nads in your quadrant and position the device directly beneath them for a hard upward strike at a velocity of up to 1,000 kilometers per hour. You can calibrate the strength from warning tap to homosocial bonding to punch this f***head's balls into space. The Groin Knee 5000. You'll never need to groin again. Are you worried that your algorithm is too accurately reflecting you back at yourself? Try Algopop, the enslaved physicist who watches smart shit so you don't have to while you're asleep. Look at all your suggested videos in your YouTube algorithm. They'll make you feel like the computer thinks you're smart. And not so long ago, in a galaxy much like our own, romance maven and online bestseller Dancy Lagarde has spent 20 years reaching the pinnacle of fame in the writing of historical romance thrillers with a supernatural twist. Now, thanks to our friends at The Last Post, this dimension finally has access to some of Dancy's finest words in the Lagarde Complete Classics line, coming soon to a publishing house run by horny penguins.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
C'est Science section, subatomic news now. Richard Herring, you look deeply into the small things in the world. What's this news story all about?
Oh, yeah. Ask me to explain this one. Thanks, Alice. I could have done the one about the Emmerdale guy who doesn't want to be a porn actor. Well, there's a new thing called a muon that might be a fifth subatomic. There's four elements at the moment that make up the subatomic world. Don't ask me what they are. One of them's a lazy atomic one. One's a strong one. One's humours. No, I don't know what they are. But there's potentially a fifth. That physics is all wrong, basically. Einstein f***ed it up. He missed a very important, very tiny thing called a muon, which possibly affects... they've been in this big lab that looks... It's called the Fermi National Accelerator Lab, and it looks like the lair from a... James Bond villain, or quite like, I don't know if you watch the Teen Titans, I do because my kids like it. It looks like quite like the Teen Titans headquarters, which is the shape of a big T. It's the most sinister looking place. They've got some big collider there, and they've discovered that possibly the muon does not obey the rules of physics. Though I sort of think, you know, I'm not an expert on maths and physics, but I sort of feel the fact that infinity, that we, as human beings, we can't get our heads around infinity. Because how can something go on forever, but how can something stop? We can't picture it, and that's such a big part of maths. There must be an answer. It either goes on forever or it doesn't, and we can't picture that, and all our maths is based on that. So I think just for that reason, maths is all wrong, which means physics is all wrong. So I think we should all start again. I'm not an expert.
Well, until I started reporting on this story, I thought muon was one of the Pokemons. So it's very confronting to me that there are the physicists working in the Fermi National Accelerator Lab, which is FNAL, I guess it is abbreviates to FNAL, which is not a good... If you can't figure out a good acronym, then you shouldn't be allowed atoms. That's their job.
Is it the Atomic National Accelerator Lab? That would be it. Then it would be anal. That's all they need to do.
Yeah, way better. But there they are, doing the Pokemon of particle physics, trying to collect them all. And it's quite intimidating to me. Benjamin, do you understand this?
I'm not sure. It's about muons, as you say. They were described as fat electrons, which I thought, great, now even subatomic particles are being body shamed. It's been described as a potential new force of nature, which will sit alongside the existing forces of nature, gravity, friction, sunshine, birdsong, and the sheer vocal power of Cher. What I read was that it's more dramatic.
I think they knew about muons, but they didn't know they were affected by an invisible force.
Right.
They're quite sensitive, the muon. An artistic temperament on the subatomic level.
Well, they're being called fat electrons, which won't help. But
true.
It's about dark matter, isn't it? Which is something like a quarter of the universe is made up of dark matter, and no one quite knows what that is. I think what it is, you know, when you leave a room shut for a few days, maybe you go away for the weekend, or go away for a holiday, and you come back, and then you open the door, and the room smells a bit kind of fusty and nasty, and you have to open the window. I think that's dark matter. Previously, we thought that was insect farts. But it turns out that that's what this is. Yeah, I don't understand it. All I know is that it's further devaluing my physics GCSE, which I did in the year 2000. It's now even further, even more useless than it was before. That's the thing about science, isn't it? It's that thing of everyone thinks they know it, and then something will come along which will teach us that we know nothing at all. And it's just, it's God, isn't it? It's God's little way of, he's stringing us along. He's going, oh, you've worked it out, have you? You've worked it out. Oh, here you go. Here's a new thing. And that's the next 100 years now. So he's going to keep doing that. Bastard.
Well, my favourite piece from this article is that most physicists believe a rich trove of new physics waits to be found if only they could see further and deeper, which sounds sort of very ambitious and inspiring, but in fact means that if we could learn more, we would know more.
Yeah. Apparently it's more dramatic than the discovery of the Higgs boson, which was in 2012. But since then, the world has just got steadily worse. So I'm not sure that finding it was... For me, it's one of the worst bosons. I'm going there.
But this is also the thing about particle physics. They say it's more exciting than the discovery of the Higgs boson, but because lay people know nothing about particle physics, things are only exciting as you tell us they are. They're not
exactly.
Actually in any way exciting because we don't know how to frame them up.
Well, they tried to quantify it, didn't they? Because they tried to say, this is our landing on the moon or this is our landing on Mars, to try and give it an equivalent of something that we would be excited by. But you can't just tell us it's that. We get excited about things landing on the moon because we can see it happening, and it's the moon which we can see and we understand.
What if we're all just part of an electron, though, and like the solar system's part of a cell, and then we're all part of something else? Have you thought about that science?
Oh.
No. Come back when you've thought of that. You know, so I've got a lot of scientific theories that I think, you know, and also I think we probably will never understand, you know, it's the we're trying to understand the mechanics of something, but we don't know why it's here. If you kind of put an ant on a hand of a clock, it might eventually work out the mechanics of what was going on, but it would not be able to understand what a clock was for, would it? The idea of time makes no sense to an ant, even if it could understand everything. So we can understand why everything works, but maybe we'll never understand what it's there for or who put it here and why it's putting us through all this crap. Why couldn't it have made it nicer for us if it's all been designed by someone?
Well, in other science news, US universities have called for clearer rules on science espionage amid a crackdown on China that's making people worried both about spying and about racism. Richard Herring, you've been to a university once. Tell us more.
I went there and I mainly did comedy. Well, it's sort of, yeah, I mean, it's sort of this weird thing where espionage meets political correctness gone mad, isn't it? Because you're saying we can't be prejudiced against other races and countries. But like, if they're trying to steal our stuff, you have to, espionage can't be like, oh, well, we're going to treat everyone equal no matter where they're from. We're not going to try and look into their secrets. If they're trying to look into ours, we're not going to do anything about it. So yeah, it seems like a bit of an odd one, really. I don't quite get what's going on here, but isn't it espionage's job to be racist? Isn't that basically what it is? So that, yeah. We need a few racists to keep things running.
A lot of profiling in espionage.
There is. So, you know, with it, I think it's, I mean, it is, being a spy is kind of ultra patriotism, isn't it? Maybe all those guys who go down to Trafalgar Square with Union Jacks, maybe we should get them into spying because they really love their country above all else. So, but I think they have to favour themselves, don't they? I think they have to stop people stealing scientific secrets for our safety.
Benjamin Partridge, you've done a physics PhD.
I have.
How do you protect your research from Chinese people?
Yes. So this story, I don't fully understand. It's basically that in the US, they're now, if you sort of look a bit Chinese, they won't let you near a university in case you steal some research. Is that what it is?
So more or less that I mean, this is obviously a concern for Australia because we are in the backyard of the Chinese superpower, and we have a huge proportion of international students, obviously not now during the pandemic, but we have a huge proportion of international students in our universities who pay for most of our universities. So it's an incredibly necessary thing to have Chinese students in our universities. But if we were doing any sensitive research, then we would have to confront the fact that if there's a hostile superpower trying to steal our stuff and they're also paying for all our stuff, that becomes an issue.
Yeah.
And we solve it in Australia by being racist.
Racism is always the answer. That's what I've learned from this story. Racism, racism, racism. I am now a racist. This is great. I'll get back on TV. I can run for London Mayor. I've made a very important decision.
It's one of these areas of policy that are, you know, super niche until they become political. And obviously at the moment there's a wave of anti-Asian violence and awareness of that violence sweeping through the US. So all of a sudden it's become a very sensitive topic, which I assume the Chinese spies will take full advantage of.
The way it was presented in the newspaper article that I read was saying that this was a Trump-era measure. So it'd kind of been cooked up by the Trump administration, but it was only now coming into force. And it's that kind of terrifying that even though Trump is gone, there might be all these other measures that have still yet to come in that is still in the pipeline. Like, we're currently in that kind of eye of the storm period where you farted, but you haven't yet been hit by the wave of smell. It's that kind of that little second just before it all hits. So it's horrifying to think that all this stuff that Trump might have put in place is still going to come to fruition just because it hasn't done so yet.
Well, it seems like they're doing a lot of just leaving what he's done. It's like, oh, did he do that? We'll leave that in there. So it seems like they're quite happy that he did quite a few of these things because they're basically just picking up the baton and running with most of them. And occasionally go, oh no, that was bad when people stormed the Capitol, wasn't it? We're getting a bit political, aren't we?
not political. Now it's time for reviews. Our review section every week, our guests bring in a number of things that they have reviewed. Benjamin Partridge, what is good or bad? And out of five, how much is it good or bad?
This week, I'm going to be reviewing towels. It's little known that the towel was invented in China in the 6th century, at the same time as fireworks and TikTok. But inventions have traditionally taken time to reach the West, and towels didn't become popular in Europe until the mid-1920s, before which everyone was slightly damp nearly all of the time. Before this period, British people would try to dry themselves off with clumps of moss, often just making themselves more damp. In fact, the average Briton supported a thriving ecosystem of newts, tadpoles and microtoads which lived in the damp folds of our skin. This meant that the average person going about their lives would be attacked by a heron on an almost daily basis. The introduction of the towel destroyed this important natural habitat, and soon we became hopelessly addicted to being dry and unbothered by the pincer-like beaks of herons. The resulting towel craze led to World War II, which began when Hitler found out that a large shipment of heavy-weft Egyptian cotton luxury bath sheets had arrived in the port of Gdansk, whereas he was still using a scratchy old one that Eva Braun had washed with his brown shirts by mistake. In the modern era, there are two main towel acquisition routes. Towels can be bought or, of course, stolen from hotels. In fact, the global economy is calibrated in such a way that it balances finely on a delicate equilibrium that is determined by the number of hotel towels in circulation at any one time. If too many towels are stolen, or if too many towels go unstolen, the dollar, euro, yuan and pound would all crash. The effect of this would be that towels would become entirely unaffordable. This is an economic scenario known as the heron's revenge. And with the dollar, yuan and pound all pegged to the number of towels in circulation, it's an important part of the world economy. So using a towel today connects you to the tumultuous history of the 20th century and also promotes international economic harmony. So why not use a towel today? 3 out of 5.
Reads like a 4. Richard Herring, what have you been reviewing?
Well, I've been reviewing not drinking alcohol. This is my 99th consecutive day without drinking alcohol. I started the year, that's January the 1st onwards. So I've done dry January, dry February, dry March, and a bit of dry April. I think I might stop for good. Though I have to say, at the beginning of the year, I had 2 testicles, and now I don't. So I've only got 1. And I think that might be connected. I thought it would be a healthy thing, but I stopped drinking. And then the doctor said I had to have a testicle taken off, and they may not be connected. So that's my slight worry about that. It's not probably not so bad for women, that particular side effect. But they might add, well, I don't know if I've still got more than the average number of testicles. So I don't want to look like I'm complaining. Okay. On average, there's slightly one less than 1 testicle per person, and I've got 1, so I don't want to look greedy. I think not drinking has been quite good. I've lost no weight. I thought I'd lose weight. I don't feel any healthier, I am probably getting slightly more done in my life. So on balance, given that my genitals are a third smaller, I will give it 3 out of 5.
Very moderate opinions in this week's review section. Now we're on to section 3. Bang, 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 bang news. This is the news out of the US that after school shootings, a number of times Wayne LaPierre, who is the head of the NRA, tends to retreat to his yacht for safety because consequences can't follow you onto water. Benjamin, how do you feel about this yacht situation?
What no one's picked up on is the reason that he goes to this yacht is so they can sail out into international waters where he's then allowed to wield the Mega Kill 5000, which is 9 AR-15s welded together, connected to a rocket launcher. So he's safe out in international waters, able to do this. I mean, they do say, don't they, that the only way to stop a bad person without a gun is a good person with a 105-foot mega yacht. So I feel for the man. Yeah, it's ironic, you know, he feels his life is in threat from the anti-gun lobby, which, you know, I don't know how he imagines they're going to kill him, but yeah, it's pretty pathetic. He every time there's a big shooting, he's worried that because of the kind of opprobrium that comes his way, that his life is in danger, and it's ridiculous.
He's almost got it, hasn't he? That's the thing. He's like, I'm scared, yeah, exactly, of all these people with guns. But the answer is more guns. The answer is give them more guns and it'll be fine. There should be a National Yacht Association that's trying to get everyone, if they can get an amendment in the Constitution, the right to own a yacht, and then all these guys will be buying up yachts. Every time they're shooting, everyone goes in a yacht. It'll be fine. We just, you know, flood America. It'll be fine.
Not to wealth shame the runner of now bankrupt organization, but he borrows the yacht. This is, I think, my favorite part of the whole story is that it's not even his yacht. He flees to someone else's yacht and I guess hides quiveringly from the entirely foreseeable outcome of the thing that he's spent years and years lobbying for.
It's not just a yacht though, it comes with a chef. So who is actually Steven Seagal.
What if the chef's got a gun? That's it. You know? That's, he goes down there. Or just put some poison in his food. You know, there are other ways to die if you want to get people, or throws them overboard.
You could just fall off a yacht. I mean, a yacht is a fairly risky place to spend your time, isn't it?
It is, I think so. Not as risky as in front of someone shooting a gun, though. So,
no, that's true.
You know, he's not stupid. He's not an idiot.
Yeah, I've seen Jaws.
As Alice said, I think we're only finding this out because the NRA is going bankrupt. So all of their kind of affairs are now in the public realm, which is always fun. And part of the bankruptcy sort of trial thing, they found out that the NRA had spent loads of money. He'd claimed loads of money for mosquito control treatments at his home, which he described as a security issue. I assume after finding out that trying to stop mosquitoes with an AR-15 assault rifle is counterproductive.
Well, that's all the time we have for our bang, 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 bang section, because now it's time for our tech section. Our tech section is things are heating up for a red-hot startup summer, according to the entrepreneurs who like saying that kind of shit because they don't know what's cool, but they think they do. Richard Herring, you're on the cutting edge of technology.
Yeah, that's true.
How hot do you think this startup summer is going to be?
Well, it's interesting that, you know, this article talks about the survival of the fittest, of course, isn't about who's the strongest or the best. It's who's the most adaptable. And the companies that have done well in lockdown are the ones that have adapted to the situation and managed to turn it to their advantage. So I think there is, you know, and I think, you know, you and I as podcasters have found that we've adapted well to the situation better than a lot of comedians would have done. So it is this sort of odd situation where for some people, a terrible event, usually for comedians, a terrible event is a good thing. It's been quite bad for most comedians as most of them haven't been able to work. Yeah, it sort of just feels that again, it's a little bit like the house thing, isn't it? If there's a nasty taste in your mouth when you think, oh, some people are, well, look, we're looking at the benefits of this. We're going to come out of this with what we've learned and create a new world. But that's, I suppose, that's just how the world works, isn't it? The fire burns down the forest and then the new shoots grow up. So it's just the inevitable progress of greed and money making will create these new startups, some of which will work. It would be nice, I think, if all the people who had a good year in 2020 to 21 had to pay a bit of extra tax to pay for all the people who didn't. But no one seems to be suggesting that for some reason. It's sort of weird if people have... I mean, I'd be happy to do it. I probably...
Sorry, Richard. I thought that Mao had started speaking then.
I think I probably had a better year last year than I would have done if it hadn't been for the coronavirus. So hooray for the virus. It was worth the, it was, let's look at it this way. It was worth the death and illness that I got maybe a few, I probably got 2,000 or 3,000 more listeners to my podcast. And you know, that translates into tens of pounds. I could buy a house in Stoke for that.
Benjamin Partridge, what are your bets for the red hot startups for this summer?
Well, it's based on pent up demand, apparently, isn't it? The idea that, you know, I've not eaten a Pret sandwich since early 2020. So as soon as the pandemic's over, I'm going to eat 250 cheese and ham baguettes in one go. I'm not sure how true that will be. You know, it's all about pivoting, isn't it? So, you know, if you're a company that makes fountain pens that connect to the internet or whatever nonsense that startups are doing, you have to find something that would be good now. So maybe a kind of rubber bust of Matt Hancock that you can just scream at and kick. Maybe that's a political answer.
That's,
I know.
Political. Okay, find, well, another
let's,
one.
Let's change it to from Matt Hancock to John Travolta. Big rubbery John Travolta you can take out all of your frustrations on. That's my startup. If you're a venture capitalist listening, I only need £100 million. If Deborah Meaden's listening.
Richard Herring, you're going to use your extra tens of pounds to invest in a startup for the red hot startup summer. What would it be?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think some kind of condom-based business, because I'm hoping, I mean, I'm going to be watching from the sidelines very much as I would be with the Emmerdale guy. I'm hoping 2021 is going to be a fest of everyone getting out and having sex with each other. So I think there's going to be a lot of more desire for condoms than are currently available. Maybe there's some kind of digital condom we can create that you can just press a button on your phone and there's a electronic barrier, maybe using muon particles of some kind. I don't know if sperm can't get past muon particles. They're tiny. There's no holes in those things.
I sort of want to have children in my lifetime, but I realize that that's a very bad thing for the environment because of overpopulation. So my goal is to discourage as many people from breeding as possible.
Okay.
by spreading stories about how bad it is to have children, saying real boner killer things, running up to teenagers who look like they're in love and saying, he's not worth it, that kind of thing. You know, that's my project for the summer, and I think that's my startup.
Well, we're in direct competition. We're in direct competition with each other, Alison. Our business is going to be a war.
We are in very much direct competition, but that's the thing. If we both go under the same operating umbrella, then it'll be like how Coca-Cola sells Coca-Cola and Mount Franklin water. It sells the alternative to its own product.
That's true.
Yes, please.
Actually, if my digital condoms work, it will help you. So maybe that, but I have a feeling they won't work. I have a feeling I'll make a lot of money very quickly and then have to slope off when people go, hold on, this condom pressing a button on the phone did not work. I have children, so I'll have to escape with my billions of pounds I'll have made.
I mean, it doesn't always need to be attack ads. It doesn't all need to be like, don't have sex. It could just be like upselling fingering, you know? In more tech news, a tech bro has been sentenced to 12 years in prison, not for being a cockhead, but for trying to buy a chemical weapon to poison his ex. Classic tech bro behavior. Benjamin, have you been following this story?
I have. This is more classic snowflake behavior. Yet again, from the woke USA, you can't even attempt to buy a chemical weapon that could kill 300 people without the woke police, well, actually the real police, arresting you and sending you to jail for 12 years. Yeah, this is a guy who tried to buy a chemical weapon that can kill 300 people. He paid the equivalent of $150. So that's 50 cents a murder. So, I mean, apart from doing it with your bare hands, that's a very cost-effective method. I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm just saying that's cheap.
Bang for your buck.
Bang for your buck-wise, that's a great way of going about it.
Well, they say every year the amount of intelligence you need to destroy the whole world goes down by one IQ point. So that's good. I think about that sometimes late at night.
He bought it with bitcoins. And I think this is part of the problem, really, which is that Bitcoin is a very big and successful currency, as we know. But you can't actually really spend it on anything apart from chemical weapons or like a rocket launcher on the dark web. So the sooner that you can pay for things in Tesco with Bitcoin, the fewer chemical weapons attacks there will be, I think.
Yes, at the moment it is the currency for terrible people who want to do terrible things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, also, you know, the people who invested in Bitcoin early took a chance on that as yet untested technology, and still as yet in many ways unproven technology, and now have millions and millions and millions of dollars in cryptocurrency that they're waiting to spend. I feel like there was no more evidence for Bitcoin than there was for any other f***ing crazy thing. And all of these people have won the lottery, but they are still idiots.
Yeah.
But now they're just idiots with a lot of money. And I'm not sure how that's going to affect the economy other than the creation of NFTs. Richard Herring, are you going to use your absent testicle as a non-fungible token? Coin it on the web?
I could try. I don't really understand what any of this stuff is. I wish I remember listening to about this stuff on the radio about 7 or 8 years ago, and it felt like it was, you know, it hit a peak, and I wish I'd just bought loads then, because it's gone way up, hasn't it? I think what's interesting about this guy, he was buying this to kill one person, which was just his ex-partner?
Just his ex.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a horrible story of revenge.
It's also a compliment to her, really, because, I mean, I feel like I'm the only person in this room who can say this, but women aren't that hard to kill, so he's gone in with the big guns.
Yeah, so, I mean, the revenge, I found people who are driven, like, a lot of comedians are driven by revenge. Not many of them kill people, although I'm not guaranteeing none of them have. It's a good job if you want to be a serial killer, because you move from place to place. No one's going to suspect you. But people who are driven by revenge, and lots of comedians become comedians because they want to show people at school, you know, look at me now, that kind of thing. But they never think they've done anything wrong personally. They never remember any of the bad things that have happened that they've done, and they never remember any of the good things that the people they're taking revenge on have done to them either. So it's a very focused-in thing, which is sort of, I suppose, all of these horrible men usually who behave in this manner prove this, but it's this horrible kind of looking at the world from just your own perspective, and he had all these plans that he had of awful ways he was going to kill a woman who just didn't fancy him anymore. I mean, it makes Piers Morgan look almost charming in his campaign against Meghan Markle. At least he hasn't tried to poison her, or he was going to put her in underwater in a you know, with a oxygen tank and just wait for the oxygen to run out. That was one of his ideas, which I hate to give that idea to Piers Morgan, because I think Piers Morgan might use that one. That's more expensive, though.
This is a real tragedy of a mind lost to the writing staff of a James Bond movie. This is the kind of thinking that would have made great entertainment television, but also a great jail sentence.
Yeah, well, luckily, hopefully, most of these guys are so stupid that they easily get caught. I mean, that is the hope, but it doesn't always work out that way. But yeah, I mean, it's absolutely terrifying, isn't it? $150 to buy something that killed 300 people. What are terrorists doing wasting their time with all these pots? I don't want to give terrorists ideas, but...
Too late.
Come on.
I mean, all he needed to do to get away with it was not write bad poetry about it, and he failed.
And leave it around his house.
In other crypto news now, there is now a Bitcoin hybrid with social media. It's called BitClout, and it's where imaginary money meets imaginary influence. Two things that have failed to properly enter the actual economy are now joining with one another so that you as an influencer can pretend that you have value in society. Benjamin, you're an online viral sensation. How do you feel about monetizing your clout?
I fully don't understand this story. I just don't get it. It's a kind of money. You get more money the more popular you are. Is that the idea?
Yes. I mean, that's exactly it.
It sounds bad.
But you don't get money for anything other than that.
God. I mean...
It's a tale as old as time. That's always the way it's been. It's just now it's done through social media. The more popular you are, the more money you get. That's just the way life is.
The problematic thing about the BitClout website is that it has given people BitClout non-consensually. So it's given fake people pretend money without their permission, which is a new level, I think, of tech bro bullshit.
But if you think about it, all money is imaginary. Money is not a real thing. Money is a concept that we all buy into. If tomorrow we all just went, nope, not going to accept that anymore, then it's worthless. So you could actually wipe out every billionaire in the world just by going, nope, that's not a thing. We're not taking it. So money is absolutely imaginary. It's just a thing that's there that it's a dream that we've all bought into. And we could stop it tomorrow.
I mean, if we're talking about wiping out every billionaire on Earth, there's not that many of them. About $150 in cryptocurrency.
That's why they're getting all the money, so we can't afford to do it. We'll have to raffle it off.
In more fake money for fake art news, Sotheby's and Phillips have announced that they will be doing high concept art auctions for non-fungible tokens for digital art, which is to say... the idea of owning a thing that you can't really own, you can now buy from Sotheby's, which lends it some legitimacy. Richard Herring, what art would you sell at Sotheby's?
Oh, that's a good question. I do a lot of art. My art is all sort of performance art, but I think I could still possibly sell it. I move stones around in a field to create care. No, I'm trying to build a wall that's visible from space, but I feel I could sell people the concept of owning part of the wall, I guess that would be. And then they own part. It's a work of art about the meaningless of human existence, how we're striving to do something and striving to be remembered, but ultimately it's futile. I'm trying to clear a billion stones off a massive field. I won't have time to do it. You could own a part of that experience. I suppose you do by listening to the podcast. You're participating in the artwork by listening to a man doing that. That's probably the greatest work of art there is. So I don't know if I can make money out of that. I would hope so. I have to tell you, this story is the first time I've felt like an old man, in that I read this story and I could not understand a word. And I go, what is this f***ing shit that people are talking about now? It doesn't make sense. And I suddenly thought, oh God, I'm old. I don't know what a non-fungible token is. I don't understand how any of this works.
So this is the wonderful thing about non-fungible tokens, is a lot of people, when confronted with the concept, feel like they're too stupid to fully understand it. But in fact, what they're doing is they're looking at the idea and thinking, well, my impression of this is too stupid to possibly be the real explanation. But in fact, it really is. Sotheby's has partnered with an anonymous artist known as Pac on a collection of self-referential works. So non-fungible tokens, which we all hadn't heard about a month ago, we now have self-referential meta-commentary art going for millions of dollars. In this instance, it's called The Fungible, and Fungible Open Editions invites collectors to buy any number of digital illustrations of the same cube spinning on a black background. A single cube costs $500, and they are interchangeable, like actual money, but importantly, they're not actual money.
But I mean, you know, but that's what most art. Again, most art in the real world is that it's, oh look, there's some paint daubed on a bit of wood or a canvas that's worth £6 billion for some reason. You know, so it's all nonsense.
But yeah,
and you know, it's just the next stage of that.
Yeah, I mean, people have always been skeptical about modern art, which, you know, and I don't want to sound like one of those people that's kind of is like, it's all nonsense. Just give me a fine painting of a lovely muscular horse. But at least kind of your Damien Hirsts had to like saw a sheep in half. Like, at least they had to like get their jeans dirty to get the money, you know, whereas this all just feels very kind of internet world and not real to me.
So I feel like the distinction that's worth making here is that digital art is real art, legitimate art. Some of it is beautiful.
Sure.
You can still actually buy that from the artist.
Right.
Like a real purchase. What they have now monetized is an association on a blockchain with the original artwork in a way that is sort of the equivalent of putting a tag of your name on the bottom corner of a Monet.
And then using it to buy chemical weapons, I think. Is that how they work?
And paying $1 million for the privilege.
Good luck to them all.
Good luck to all the fungible or non-fungible. Good luck to you both.
And that brings us to the end of our show. We're flipping through the classified ads at the back. For sale, a number of broken down donkeys and services, which I cannot name on this child-friendly show. We're coming up towards the end. Benjamin Partridge, have you got any ads to stick in the end of the magazine?
Yes, I have got my own podcast. It's called the Beef and Dairy Network Podcast. It's a imagined industry podcast for the beef and dairy industries. Please listen. It's good fun.
Very good.
Thank you.
Please send your story suggestions to @HelloGarglers on Twitter. Richard Herring, have you got any ads to stick in?
I guess I have. My podcast, Hello Stopper, is still going. And excitingly, we hopefully are going to be doing some live ones with an actual audience as well as a virtual audience at the Clapham Grand in May, June and July. So go to richardherring.com/gigs and you can find out about those. And I'm aiming for some big guests. And we'll be back in a theatre. And there'll be people there.
Wow.
It's going to be amazing. Something will go wrong. But no, it doesn't matter. It won't go wrong. It's going to be great.
Thank you so much. Sunday, the 25th of April, there will be a Last Post live show available on the internet. Go look at the Bugle Podcast website for that. I'm currently at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival performing my show every night at 6 p.m. It is called Kronos. I will be streaming it live for my patrons next Friday, the 16th of April. So if you're interested in seeing it but are not in Melbourne, you can sign up to my Patreon at patreon.com/AliceFraser. You've been listening to The Gargle. It is a Bugle Podcast and Alice Fraser production. Your editor is the magnificent Ped Hunter. Your executive producer is Chris Skinner. I'll talk to you again next week.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.